Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And Raymond Vega claimed his first goal for Tottenham.
And Vega! Everton look to the linesman. There's no flag. And Tottenham have the lead.
Here's the resulting corner from Ginola. And that time it is in. Tottenham are 3-2 up. And it's a goal for Ramon Vega.
Ramon Vega's equaliser initiating the response. Stand up if you want the truth.
It's a goal for Ramon Vega. It's 3-2.
Hello and welcome to The Last Word on Spurs. Thank you for downloading, thank you for listening to us as we continue to fight and battle the coronavirus. And what we thought we'd do is, again, we take you away for an hour or two to give you some escapism, to give you some light relief, and to interview another former Spurs player. And we're delighted to have him join us for this next hour or so. John, how are you?
Hello, guys. Yeah, I'm doing really well, surviving COVID-19. And as always, I'm looking forward to this really special show. We've got a top guest lined up this afternoon. And Ricky, I'll let you introduce the man himself.
Well, thank you. Well, I'd say just again there, as John said, we are still battling, fighting COVID-19. Our thoughts go out to everyone, our listeners, people out there, everybody. Keep on staying safe. Keep in your houses. Let's keep on following that government legislation and the rules laid out by them. So we're delighted to welcome to The Last Word on Spurs, former defender, although he scored quite a lot of goals during his time at Tottenham. Delighted, 64 league games, 7 goals. Ramon Vega joins us. Ramon, how are you?
Hello, guys. How are you? How are you doing?
Not bad, not bad at all. Ramon, thank you for joining us. If the world was as crazy as it is at the moment, we've decided to delve back into the 90s. And I think, as I said to you off air as a joke, you know, that time in Spurs, it was a bit of a crazy time. We always kind of say to fans that kind of in a modern era that they look at Tottenham now and we may be going through a bit of a transition period that, to be fair, the 90s, that felt like a continuous transition. So thank you for joining us, Ramon.
Thank you, first of all, for having me on here. And of course, it's nice to go back to the 90s. Obviously, everybody now is going for a very, very difficult moment anyway. What's going on now worldwide? I think the key part is so everybody keeps safe and stays at home. And I hope everybody understands that now we have to stay at home for the sake of be safe, everybody, you know. But it's nice to talk about some good memories in the 90s. I definitely had some good ones, of course, bad ones as well. That's what happened. I think that's part of Spurs as well, to be honest with you. I think the fans has to say it as well. So, but in this case, I think I'm gladly and happy to talk about the 90s, you know.
Fantastic. And John, I've got another man like you. We're hitting 30. Those 90s, we'll never forget them, John, will we, in our time?
It's a funny time for supporters of Tottenham Hotspur because it was sort of twinned with the greatest success our arch enemies had down the road. So it was sort of, you know, Tottenham had some roller coasters in terms of results, managers. There was a lot of ups and downs at the club, as well as our neighbours doing so well at the time, who I won't mention the name of. So, yeah, it was a real, I'd say, character building, Ricky, for somebody like me and you. And even more so maybe for Ramon, and he'll explain that later on in the show.
I'm sure he will. Well, listen, we're going to get straight onto it. Ramon, you were born in Switzerland to Spanish immigrant parents. Yes. You specifically mentioned in the past that you don't forget where you came from. Your parents needed to look for jobs in the country. They didn't even speak the language. You grew up in a house that were fighting for a job, always looking for the next possible one. That gave you that kind of immigrant attitude that, do you feel, for you, moulded you as a character?
Definitely, without a doubt. I think you can say that whatever environment you grow up, that actually builds you for future, you know. And I think it's important for whatever background you're coming from, or races, religions, whatever it is. I think that really gives you kind of the initial of your life. And in my case, you know, my parents, you know, let's say coming to Switzerland without speaking German or French, and only Spanish in those days, I would say it's remarkable anyway, in the first place, they went all the way to Switzerland to get a job, you know. In those days, can you imagine, in the 50s, it was not as easy to travel, especially when Franco, well, let's call it dictatorship, and Franco in Spain was over there. That's not an easy part to do it. And so, yeah, I grew up in an environment where, yeah, that was immigrant. I pretty much, most like from very young age, needed to translate to my parents all the documentation. And grew up in Switzerland was an environment with already German was my first language to start with, and then French and Italian was in school as well, you know. So, but then at home I was speaking Spanish with my parents, as you also just mentioned, you know. They came Spanish speaking without knowing German or French or anything like that. So me born and grew up there, it has given me an enormous advantage in terms for the future. I can actually only say, later on, 20, 30 years later, you won't know when you're 7, 8 years old, that actually you can speak 3 to 4 languages, how much advantage it can give you in the future, you know. And I'm very glad my parents actually done that move, if I look back, you know. But at the same time, they give me the humble side of it, that you have to work for every single penny you want to earn. And, you know, I think money doesn't come easy, to be honest with you. And I think that attitude and humbleness has given me to me for all my life, you know.
Ramon, you actually began your professional career back in 1989. It was in the second season, or should I say, yeah, second season with Grasshoppers, that you became a linchpin. Three titles with the club. You played 67 league games in the 94 and 95, and then 95 and 96 campaigns, as Grasshoppers made it consecutive title wins. What was it like for you starting your career in Switzerland?
Well, first of all, you know, Switzerland is a very specific football country. It's not like England, Germany, or Spain, or Italy, where in those days were the biggest countries in football in the world. You know, Switzerland is a small country. You know, everybody was saying, you know, they're making cheese, watches, and banking, of course, you know, one of the attitudes there, you know. Me, as a kind of an immigrant kind of boy, in this case, Spanish background, it was also not easy at the beginning, because obviously you needed to gain the respect from your Swiss counterpart, your players as such, you know. And to be playing for one of the, I would say, the best team in Switzerland, Grasshopper Club Zurich, in those days, it was an honor to even to be part of them and be part of the team. And then winning for them so many times over 8, 9 years I was playing for them, it's a great thing, you know.
During your time with Zurich Business School, in your spare time, doing a thing in finance, was it always sort of a backup plan for you in case you never quite made it as a professional footballer?
I think it came about totally default, to be honest with you. I won't call it the backup plan in this case. It was totally, football was first of all my first passion to start with, okay. But that comes back again from my parents and my mother, were saying football, yeah, it's not kind of a job, you know. We came here to have a better life in Switzerland, to have better opportunity, and etc., you know. And Switzerland, as I said, was not a football country, so you couldn't say, okay, you're going to leave out of football, you can earn out of football, you know. Either you have to be a lawyer, you have to be a doctor, or you have to be in banking, is one of the major industry there. And my mother was really pushing to do an education, you know. So when Grasshopper Clubs came actually to my house, and my mother, you know, and was saying, yeah, we want to have him as a professional. And my mother said, he will not be professional 100%, he has to study. So pretty much eyebrows came from the club manager. He said, what are you talking about? You know, they were not used to somebody telling that. And my mother actually fired it, that I get an university and a kind of educational let's say, semi-professional job as a footballer there, you know. And if I look back now today, I think it was the best choice ever and the best thing that happened for me for going forward, you know.
Yeah, it seems to have worked out really well for you. It's not well documented, which is youngster Oliver Skip. He also completed an economics A-level, certainly, and then made his Premier League debut the following day. So it shows that some people are still interested in thinking ahead of other options, maybe when they finish up with the game. So obviously that proved to be a very shrewd move by you, Ramon.
To be honest, in those days, in the 80s, 90s, you know, the footballers around the world, I don't think they had the opportunity to even have that kind of educational background. First of all, is from the background they're coming from. As such, you know, that didn't, you know, parents either didn't have the money or didn't have the opportunity to put their kids in a proper school education, you know. So football was pretty much the number one escape route to actually earn some substantial money or make a living out of it, you know. So that's one thing. But at the same time, we were kind of pioneering, I would say, in the 90s, you know, already, and grasshoppers were actually with me at one of the prototypes, we call it, to say football and education can actually work very well together, because it's not everybody, frankly saying, can be a professional player. And if it's not happening, at least you've got something to back up. Even at 19, 20 or 21 years old, you can have an injury, you can have, you know, such a bad season, or the manager doesn't want you and you're suddenly standing out without the contract. You know, if you have nothing done until 23, 25 years old as such, and you have an education, at least you've got something to back up. And I think this is today, I think a lot has learned off that period in the last 20, 30 years. And I think a lot of youngsters start to realize, or parents start to realize, okay, my little son has a dream to be a professional player in football. But you know what? You need to have also a backup, whatever education you need. It can be marketing, whatever. It doesn't have to be very complex. At least something you can actually go back into the day-to-day routine as a job. You can get a job somewhere outside of football. And I think this is very important for a youngster who wants to be a professional player. Of course, the best job in the world is to be a professional footballer, you know?
Yeah, it sort of stood you in really good stead. And obviously, once you had that background, but then in the summer of 1996, you had your sort of big move to Serie A, which at the time was the leading league with Cagliari. And how did that move come around? And who were some of the players you came up against in Serie A? And what was that experience like?
Again, it went everything very, very, very fast in terms of my career. It's just something that happens within two, 3 years, suddenly from playing at Grasshopper, suddenly playing in England, opening game against England and in Wembley, you know.
And you scored.
I think, I'm not sure if I scored in that one, but I scored on the friendly game, I think.
But
we draw 1-1. We should actually won against England, and that would be embarrassing in the home ground, to be honest. But saying that, for me, it was like kind of falling in love with English football, because playing Wembley at that time, from all these English fans, were absolutely fantastic receptions. It was fantastic for me. So, wow, this is the future. Like, I had no clue I was going to go to Spurs at that time, because I was still playing for Grasshoppers, you know. But I had a great game, and the European Championship is always a great platform for every player in the world, you know. If you play well, then most of the big clubs or international clubs will come for you. You know, that's what happened. That Serie A, at that time, I should just rightly say, it was the best league in the world. You're really playing week in, week out with the best strikers in the world. We're talking the Ronaldo, the Brazilian, the Roberto Bachos, Signori, and so on, etc. So, Batistuta, exactly. Bobic, Savicevic, Milan, you know, all these guys, all the big players there, you know. For me, as coming from a small country of Switzerland and a defender, don't forget that at the time Italy was nominated as always the best defenders in the world coming out of Italy. And to be coming from Switzerland to play from Italy as a defender, it was an honour as well, you know. It was a great experience. Young, go to the Serie A, play against all these top players in the world. It has formed me to definitely do a better player as well, you know.
Just at the age of 22, you was also frequently a member of the Swiss international side under Roy Hodgson. What was that like to play for Roy? Because he's a very experienced manager, still at Crystal Palace at the moment. Did you learn a lot during your time with Roy when you was under the team?
Very, very, very much, actually. Well, thanks to Roy Hodgson, pretty much I had a call to the Swiss national team. I think Roy Hodgson was quite pioneering in a way
the Swiss national team was going in the future. As you can see today, I think Swiss national team today is one of the top, I would say top 15, 20 teams in the world, you know, with quality plays, you know. I think the time we, in the 90s, we pretty much built up the reputation that we have quality players in a very small country like Switzerland to produce some quality players. And Roy Hodgson was definitely, without a doubt, the best manager for the Swiss team. And he caught me up already with 18, 19 years old as well to be on the national team, be part of it. I didn't play every day, but every time, but I learned a lot. He was very compassionate. He was very professional, but he had also a lot of time for young, talented players. And I can see that the same he made with the England team when he took over one day. So everybody was thinking, oh, why is two young players have no experience? But look at nowadays, most of the young players playing for the England team, you know?
Only 7 months later, you signed for Tottenham Hotspur for a transfer fee of £3.75 million. What attracted you to Spurs, and when did you actually first hear of the club's interest?
I think Spurs, already in the summer, to be honest with you, inquiring about myself during the European Championship in England, you know. But I just didn't want to know about anything at the time because I just wanted to focus for my Swiss national team until it's finished the tournament, you know. And then... That was the first kind of I heard about Spurs, but not just limited, but Leeds in Liverpool at the time as well. Okay, now, but Serie A, as you can imagine, is not like the Premier League today. It was obviously very attractive for every single player to play there. As I said, mentioned just before, you played really, really the best players in the world in terms of strikers, you know. And I think that's something that attracted me in the first place. And when Cagliari came in, I said, well, if I have a chance to play with the best teams in the world or against the best strikers in the world, why not? That's a great move, you know. And when 6 months later, the Spurs knocked again on the door, and then I decided, well, okay, I think England will be the future for me because I fall in love in the first place when I played the tournament in England, in Wembley, against England.
You aside Gerry Francis off the cover, impressive outing for Switzerland against England at Euro 1996. Yeah. The former White Hart Lane chief went as far to suggest that you could be our, as some would say, Tony Adams of Arsenal upon your arrival at Hotspur Way. What did you make of that from Gerry Francis? Was that a man that clearly sold you the club when you first spoke with him about the move?
Well, clearly he had a very good opinion about myself, and I think I'm glad that he said that. Of course, Tony Adams is a legend at Arsenal. He's done, he was very successful at a very good period at Arsenal when I came to the club already, you know. And I remember what Gerry was saying to me. I think I was not even a month within the club, you know, and he said, you know, I like to be the captain. And I pretty much said, I'm very humble, said, yes, I'd love to. Well, I'm only a month here. I think there should be an English player to be a captain at the time and to be the leader. And at the time was Saul Campbell going through the youth rank. And I said, I think he would be the ideal captain to do that than myself. So, yes, I was offered to be the captain at the time. But at the same time, so I was also realistic in the sense, I think an English player would be much more suitable to be a captain of Tottenham Hotspurs. And I think it was right because Saul Campbell thereafter done a very good job for Tottenham. Yeah. Of course, he went across the road again, to be honest with you. So we're not going to talk about that. But in the same time, but in the same time, I think it gives Saul a big confidence to further his career. He was a young player at the time when he arrived. I remember still, I think tactically he was still leaving over the place. I remember myself, you know, when I came to Spurs. But he was strong, he was fast, and he had the characteristics to be a good centre-half, to be honest with you. And I think he would be great captain for Spurs and Leeds, you know. I was humble on it to be offered, but at the same time, I'm a very realistic person as well.
In terms of how Tottenham approached you as a player, does that come from Tottenham approaching your agent, and then you sit down with Tottenham and, you know, Alan Sugar at the time and have a meeting? Or how does it actually work in terms of Tottenham approaching a player?
Well, it's funny enough. The first approach, he went through I remember I was with the national team at the Euro 96 at hotels. Where were we again? In Birmingham. We were playing at the Villa Park at the time. That was our, one of the second group stage, first group stage. And we there would come faxes and telephone through the hotel to my room, actually. And pretty much, I got an offer for to come to Spurs. And they said, well, and at that time, I didn't have an agent, to be honest with you, myself, you know. So, and I was clearly to everybody, listen, I'm not going to talk to anybody until I finish my my tournament because I want to focus on the Swiss national team. Then I had my time in that 2 or 3 weeks to organize myself and get the lawyer as such. And then when things finished, then my lawyer was in touch with the relevant people who wanted to have me and my services at that time. And Italy was, as I said before, was the one actually done the deal. And then 6 months later, we came with Spurs.
I find that so interesting how, obviously, at the time, it was faxes and things like that.
It has changed a lot, to be honest, the last 20... So, yeah, I'm not sure for the better, to be honest with you, because I think everybody wants now everything immediately. Yeah. And I think you can potentially, it's actually... in a good way, by default, what's happening now with these viruses, I think everybody has to reflect a little bit to slow down, to be honest with you. That no, everything goes very quick and everything has to be done now. And also have a little bit of time for everybody. I think it's a good time, even it's not the way it should be, because everybody at the moment is fighting either for life or working to save life, where it's not a nice way to do it, but be honest with you, sometimes you have to force people to do something. It doesn't happen overnight, you know.
In terms of before you joined the club, did you know a lot about them historically?
Yes, of course, listen, I was as a young boy, you always watch, you know, in Switzerland, the FA Cup finals was one of the, I think not just Switzerland, I think all around the world, the FA Cup finals in May was always a kind of deep, big event, you know. We had enormous barbecues with friends and so on. And there's no doubt, obviously, having a cup team like Spurs to be seeing an eight, especially an eight at the time, watching them in the finals, not limited, obviously, Liverpool as well, at the time with John Barnes. And so that's when I really had the first grip of England football and the passion behind there at the time. You know, it was absolutely great for me. And then I had no clue that 10, 15 years later, I had the opportunity to play in England, and especially for Spurs. And I think that a dream definitely came through when I was 6, 7, 8 years old, or 9 years old, every year watching the FA Cup final, you know.
So, Ramon, you come through the door at Tottenham, you're signed by Gerry Francis, Gerry Francis gets sacked, and then we see the arrival of a fellow Swiss guy for you in Quinn Gross. Now, that appearance that season, a lot of fans, you know, I think you know what's coming here, a lot of them are going to be mentioning the fact about that tube ticket where he was in that presentation with Alan Sugar and he had that ticket in his ear and said, look, this is it, I came on the tube. Tell me, Ramon, you've got to be honest with us here.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. I'm not disrespecting Quinn Gross at this point, you know, but I have to laugh, you know. Frankly, sir, I needed to laugh as well a little bit. I think, listen, I need to get, it's a cultural issue as well here. So in Switzerland, less is more, okay? Switzerland is a country where it's quite a wealthy country, and I would say 90% they're well off and or good middle class, let's call it that, okay? All right? So people don't listen to show off as much what you have, yet, what kind of car you have, whatever it is. It's really, they can go with a bus. And the guy potentially might have a couple of million quid on accounts, you know. You will never realize, you know. That's kind of the Swiss attitude, you know. Yeah. Now, he's coming from that background, less is more. Yeah, he wanted to show kind of, I'm part of you guys, like everybody. I'm going with the tube to the stadium and everything else. Me already being Spurs and realizing how it works over here. I think the smallest car was a Bentley or Rolls Royce in the car park at Spurs at the time. And I was like, oh my God. And now he's coming with the tube ticket. And the Bentley in the car park at Spurs, Walter Lane was like, Mercedes, Bentleys, Rolls Royce, you name it, you know. And why I needed to laugh as well, but obviously, me knowing what the Swiss culture is and what he wanted to kind of show to the people I Spurs fan that he's coming in a way, a humble way, not coming with a big flash car to the stadium, you know. And I think it's a culture issue there, and that's the reason why I think, yeah, I think the fans, without a doubt, took it maybe the wrong way, or maybe right way or not right. That's another question. Mm. But I'm just explaining why he actually done it there. Now,
he meant well, didn't he? I mean, that's the case you're saying there. He meant very
that,
well.
What I'm trying to say, he meant the right way, but he didn't come across to the Spurs fans like that, especially, you know, Spurs fans were going through already a very hard time of that season. We really were struggling. And it's funny, we would still had, if I see on paper, we still had a good team. I think David Ginola, you name it, all of that. Klinsmann then came afterwards, you know. But saying that at the same time, you need to ask yourself as well, at that situation, a big club of Spurs, potentially maybe close to relegation at that year, which manager might even took that job? That's a question mark you should ask as well, you know, because it's a very risky job to take, because everything can happen. Once you, if you go down with Spurs, you're not going to work ever, frankly saying, because it's a big club and you're relegated. He took the chance and actually saved us, whatever you can say, but we stayed up, you know, and the rest was history.
Just one final question from me, just on Christian here, Ramon. Did you know actually much about him before he joined the football club? So was it a surprise to you when he was announced as manager?
Well, no, I knew him extremely well because he was my manager at Grasshoppers for a good 3.5 years when I was playing at Grasshoppers Zurich, and we were very successful. We won the league, we won the cup. Grasshoppers, I think, extremely successful with the Christian Gross. We also qualified for the Champions League. We went all the way to the quarterfinals with Grasshoppers. So we had a very successful kind of time as well. And so I knew Christian Gross extremely well. But I was surprised because I remember the night before the presentation, I had no clue Christian Gross was coming. Alan Sugars called me up. Frank saying, so listen, Ramon, I think tomorrow you're going to have a manager you know very well. He said, what are you talking about? Then he said, well, Christian Gross. He said, what? So I was a little bit surprised. And he said, yeah. And then he was asking, what do you think about it? He said, well, we already signed him. What do I think about it? You already signed him. What can I say? God. You know, you already done the deal. He's presenting him as well. So obviously, yeah, from the experience I had working with him at Grasshopper and very successful, of course, I had very good experience. Now, question mark, was he the right man at the time for Spurs? That's another question mark. Of course, you know, it was a difficult time, but, you know, I knew him very well. And I be honest with you, in the same time, he needed to come in and get some discipline in the dressing room. So maybe, you know, no, at the time, you know, England football was not as very disciplined in terms of the food, the diet, the exercises, all of that. And those days was close to non-existing. And he came, you know, like Swiss, German were very disciplined in. And for some of the players, we never really worked like that. It was a difficulty to take in, to be honest with you.
He signed Tottenham, Ramon. The training ground at the time, was that based up in Chigwell at Spurs Lodge?
Yeah, yeah.
How did you find those facilities, having come from Cagliari in Switzerland?
Can I be honest?
Yeah, of course.
Please.
Oh, goodness me. I had absolutely fantastic infrastructure. I think professionalism point of view, it was top-notch. Training facilities, including testing of your dietitian, something with the blood tests, you know, all of that, everything. So you got used these for years doing these. When I joined England, I Spurs in the time, I joined Chigwell at the time, the training ground. I thought the first one, I thought it was a joke because it's a dressing room smaller than ever seen in my life to start with. Gym hardly non-existing. I think there was one bike and the bike was like the 18th century still. And I said, no, I thought there's something missing. It must be somewhere else, a big room, a big gym, and etc. And I remember the physio at the time giving me, I was still laughing and I remember that, giving me a David Lloyd gym card. And I say, excuse me? Yeah, I thought it was a present because the gyms, when they're giving you a present for their things, no, that's you, that's your fitness place. What? Wow. I need to go the Republic pace to get myself fit in a way with a David Lloyd. At that time, I had no clue it was David Lloyd James. At the time, it was just around the corner from Chigwell, you know. I thought, no, this is a joke. So I need to reconfirm that again with the manager at the time. So he said, well, this is what it is. We haven't got the fitness coach. We haven't got this. We have this. So you need to get fit for yourself for Saturday. So pretty much, I had the David Lloyd gym card, and that's it.
So that's such an interesting story.
Can you imagine that today?
No. I mean, have you been to Hotspur Way, the club's new training ground?
this is a luxury compared to what I used to have in those days. You know, it's obviously they learned that over the last 20 years, and I think you can say whatever you say, but the foreign players and managers definitely had an input and knowledge to do that. You know, I think starting with Arsene Wenger, one of them, you know, without a doubt, you know. But that was what I had when I arrived at the time, you know, and it has changed very rapidly thereafter. As Alan Shook had done extremely well to listening to most of us as well, that we need to have some certain infrastructure in place. When he'd done that, you know, over the years, you know, but that's what I actually faced in the first place, you know.
And did players communicate with Alan Sugar quite freely? I mean, how was his reign at Tottenham? And primarily, did they sort of communicate their displeasure with Christian Gross at all to Lord Sugar?
Yeah, the communication with Alan Sugar was very good. I think Alan Sugar was always there at the dressing room. He was always supporting the team, whatever we can, or individual players. He was tough in his way of handling things, but very, very, very loyal and honest about it, you know. And as you might know, no, honesty sometimes people don't like, you know, and you have to take it. But in the same time, it's a very loyal kind of and supporting, you know. So, you know, the communication was there, and even in bad times, he was still there, and he was actually supporting the dressing room, you know. So at that point of view, I think Alan Sugar was, I think at that time, a very good chairman.
I'm very pleased you said that, because Lord Sugar follows both mine and Ricky's accounts on Twitter. So he'll probably be listening in. So I'm pleased you've passed the test there, Ramon.
And also, well, Lord Sugar, doesn't happen often with Tottenham fans. I think definitely his tenureship at Spurs is split amongst supporters. But we are going to go for a very quick break. And when we return, we discuss surviving relegation, the appointment of George Graham, finally Spurs winning a trophy. Ramon, yes, was part of the team which Spurs won a trophy. And also Ramon's time at Celtic and after football. Do not go anywhere. We are back after this very, very short break.
And Ramon, during your season at the club, once again, we had to turn to Tottenham legend Jurgen Klinsmann to come back and save us on another match day relegation escape. It was a famous 6-2 win at Wimbledon. And on that game, I just wanted to ask you, how big the doubts in the players' minds going into that game? Was there any pressure from the boardroom at the club and explaining how important that game was? Did you guys already know that? How did you feel sort of from the fans around maybe the training ground or on match days? And what was the sort of atmosphere like? And how big were doubts about your own career and where the club was heading going into that absolutely huge game at Wimbledon?
Yeah. Well, as I say, I think that year was a very, very difficult year. I think for everybody, that means from the players then to the board, definitely not limited. All the supporters, of course, you know. They were kind of really like, you know, but sometimes obviously very annoyed in some of the games we played or lost as well, you know. And we have to take it in as a player. As a professional player, you have to take that. Every game sometimes, you know, the bougie and all that stuff. But in my position, you know, I never really was wound up about it, of course, you know, in that case, because I'm a professional player and that's part of the game, to be honest with you. But at the same time, you know, we're still human, we're still players, we still have to do our best for them, you know. But in the same time, it was a game where we went in, we know what is to play for, either Premier League or Championship, to be honest with you. And it was a huge game, to be honest with you. It was a big pressure for the players to start with, because we had enormous responsibility. We had, as I say, I still remember in the dressing room, we were looking at each other, look at guys, what kind of names we have in the dressing room at the time. It was Klinsmann came also back at the time, Nicola Berti, we're talking David Junilar, Les Ferdinand, Saul Campbell, Darren Anderton, and so on. So we did definitely had a good team, but we still nearly the relegation to the last game, you know. So the pressure was very, very high. I still remember that walking in the dressing room and going down 2-0 half time. That was pretty much, I think, the hardest to take in, to be honest, in my career as well, because we pretty much at half time thinking we are at the championship now, guys. If we want to, if you pretty much don't get the finger out here, guys, that's what we talked about in the dressing room. If we don't get the finger out here, we are at the championships, guys. We need to go out and show these guys we actually can do the job. And that's what happened. I think that's where the famous Klinsmann came in with these four goals. And we won that 6-2, and that's it. The rest is history. We went to the Premier League next season.
Sort of half-time team talk. Was anyone particularly angry and saying, come on, guys, get up for this? Was that you, Ramon? I mean, what was the atmosphere?
We were more than angry when we came in. I'm telling you that now, I can say football boots were flying around the dressing room. Water bottles, everything. And people, obviously, you know, because you need to realise there was a very, 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 very stressed momentum as well, you know. And where everybody played football, even on an amateur point of view, you know. If you start to get 1-0 down, 2-0 down, you're really getting, because you're competitive, you know, you want to win all the time. You're getting angry. You want to show that you can actually win. And so in such a game where everything is at stake, the nerves, the pressure, everything, everybody needs to release the stress. And the only way of doing it is, of course, either you scream at somebody or you throw whatever. And it's not the best way of doing it, but in such a small dressing room, what do? You're not going to go out and scream to the air. You need to release that kind of stress, you know. And we are men, and we can take it, you know. And it's not, but only the dressing room happened. I think Man United, we heard they got a lot of things when Alex Ferguson coming sometimes, you know, have to hair dry, you know. But at this time, we as a player, frankly saying, had more to talk to each other than actually the manager, because it's us on the pitch and not the manager. It's us on the pitch who has to do the job. And frankly saying, it was actually good because everybody went out knowing what his job is to do in the next 45 minutes. And that happened afterwards.
Out of interest, Ramon, at that time with Christian Gross, did you still feel that he was the right man in terms of the management of the club? Was there a feeling that, you know, he could galvanise that dressing room, or did it feel that he was losing it? Obviously, because George Graham came in slightly after that, and we're going to bring it on to him in a second. But at that point in that Wimbledon game, throughout that period, was there a sense that he kind of lost the dressing room? And if a manager does lose the dressing room, what does that mean for players? Does that mean they no longer listen to the instructions? What is that like for you as a player?
Well, I was a player. I always respect the manager, whatever is good or potentially bad, because it's not me I'm pointing the manager. It's always the board or the sporting director or the owners appointing them. So, you know, I always respect the decisions as such, you know. And if sometimes players are just frustrated because potentially themselves are not playing well, and they want to let it out on the manager, and that's actually the unfair part of it from the manager. And the manager knows that. When you're a manager, you're not a player. You've got 11 with you. You've got 11 against you, to be honest, you as a manager. And that's a tough job to be doing, you know. Coming back to the question, was he the right man at that time? In hindsight, maybe yes, because nobody else would potentially take that job, because it was a difficult one. It's one of the biggest clubs in England as well. He was taking a club where already was struggling, to be honest, he needed a turnaround. And frankly, he turned around in the last game. Would we go the other way and go in the relegation, you know? So the question is, who could actually really take that job at that time? It's not, was he the right man? Who really possible was available and wanted to take that job? And I think that's more the question you should ask, you know?
Now, obviously, after that season and after that famous win at Wimbledon, we ended up finishing 14th. But at the start of the following season, 98-99, Gross was actually sacked, and then George Graham took over. How easy was it to work with George, such a notorious defensive coach, and of course, a man so closely associated with our rivals Arsenal?
Well, I think the rivals, it's more a kind of, it's part of the fan kind of rivalry, and it's unhealthy also as well, because it's a competitive side as well, you know. And for us players, I think it's more the technical side, more important than actual rivalry. If he's a good manager and he's doing a job for us and you can play well under him, then frankly saying, as a player, you don't really care what he's coming from, because he you're playing for Spurs, and you want to win for Spurs, and you don't think about where he came from, you know. Saying that, in the same time, we improved extremely well on the defensive. I should just mention about it. Defensive kind of tactics, you know. He really, really had an emphasis on working on the training pitch, the back four, you know, with the and me, Sol Campbell, and obviously the late Justin Endenburg on the left side, and Stephen Carr. We work, you know, at least every second day on the back four constantly to be a really kind of a unit, you know. And you, to be honest with you, I was very glad, because that's the training session I used to have in Italy. You know, Italy, they have a very tactical kind of defensive way of training session, you know. That's why sometimes defence was very difficult to break in Italy, and I was famous with that, you know. And that was something I was missing. And when George Graham was coming in, I was happy the actually he emphasis in that one. And that gives actually the stability for the whole team, because if you're in the back, you're stable, the front man can actually play free successfully. And I think we had a good run then afterwards.
It's interesting you say that, because, you know, you're right there, Ramon, that Graham's appointment did galvanise Tottenham. We had two fantastic cup runs, yet another FA Cup semi-final defeat to Newcastle. But of course, finally that trophy. Did those cup runs leave you with the impression that finally the club was heading in the right direction?
Well, absolutely. Not limited before the cup run, I think, if I remember the stats, we were, as a defender, we always look about how many goals we were conceding at the time. I think we had about 11 games or something like that, one or two games only in that run. And I think that's, I think for Spurs for the last two or three years, never had such a run. And that immediately goes into the success, because the minute you don't concede, either you win or you draw. So you can't really lose as such, you know. And that was a very, very good omen for going forward. And I can see, goodness me, this is going in a different direction. We are going to succeed here. And now with the cup run, we were on both competition, really kind of from semi-quarterfinals and one in the finals, the one we won. I thought that we were really the right direction.
And in terms of, obviously, the highlight of any player's career, Ramon, is winning trophies. As Ricky said earlier, we did find him in a trophy. What did that at Spurs, by winning the League Cup, thanks to Alan Nielsen's last-minute winner, what were your memories of that final and the lead-up to the game and the morning of the game? And what was it like to finally lift that trophy for Tottenham, with the club having waited so long to lift a major trophy in English football?
Well, first of all, I have to say, I was feeling extremely good at the time, also from playing, but it really was because we came on a run on with the back season. We're actually nearly close to relegation. Then we started okay, and then the change of George Graham came in place. And we were still a little wobbly as a team. We're still not united as such. He started to bring us to the level where everybody works for each other, be more unit, be more compact as a team, you know. And that run really, really, really helped us to see, goodness me, we can actually win something now here, you know. We can actually, and funny enough, at that time, I started to feel an injury in my foot. And then I said, goodness me, not now. I can't be injured now, because that's the best or the worst time to do it, because now we are close to quarterfinals, semi-finals of both cups, and potentially finals as well. At that time, I was not in the League Cup final yet. And I didn't realise at that time, looking back, because only after the final, I knew it, my foot was actually broken already for 2 weeks, to be honest with you. And I was playing this 2 to 3 weeks coming up to the final with a broken foot and a broken ankle.
And a lot of Spurs fans, Ramon, will remember that in the final itself, you made an absolutely vital last-ditch sliding tackle to deny Emil Heskey, who at the time was a phenomenal striker in English football, and you were there to block him. And it was on the back of that sort of galvanised Tottenham and Alan Nielsen to score that diving header following that really good run by Stefan Iversen. I mean, what was it like for you emotionally-wise? Did you feel like when you made that tackle that the luck was then with Tottenham and we were going to go on and do it?
Well, absolutely. I'm always going to game anyway to win anyway. But once you start to go into the memories I have to walk, I'm still in the old Wembley Stadium, you know, that really famous tunnel to go walk up there. My memories came back to the 96 European 96 when I played against England again, you know, because that's the last time, frankly, I had that experience coming out of the dressing room. I had that long walk, that tunnel to come up to on the pitch. And I was very happy and I'm very glad I actually experienced that, because this is one of the most historical stadiums you can actually be in play. And then if you win on top of that, that's something money can't buy, first of all. And it's something for years will stay in me, you know. But that experience, it was a goosebumps experience, frankly saying, because this is that's what football makes you love about it. And that's why I fall in love with football in the first place, a little kid, you know, to have this experience to go on the pitch and then win. But in my back of mind, I had my ankle broken and my foot with a big pain of painkillers. So I need to still play 90 minutes. I have my mind strong to do that, you know. And I still remember that tackle, because I think at that time Saul Campbell just lost one of the tackles against Emil Heskey. Big striker, Emil Heskey, you know. And he was galloping on his own. Then I pretty much, you know, whatever reason, all my pain was left behind. I only thought to defend that ball, and lucky enough, I could actually done that tackle at the time, and then go on to win with a good.
Yeah, that tackle, you know, at the time, from memory, was like a goal, basically. You know, it denied Leicester a clear goal-scoring chance right at the end of the game. They probably would have gone on with the momentum and won that game. So you had a huge part to play in that cup final. And I'm just looking back on the run to the cup final. It's not something that's talked about often, but we had some really big wins on the way. Round four, we won 3-1 at Anfield.
Yes.
In the quarterfinals, we beat Manchester United 3-1. So that was obviously a hugely impressive run. And then we had two very tough semi-finals against Wimbledon once again. We eventually won 1-0 in the second leg. And obviously, did the players, while the run was going on, think, wow, we could actually get there and lift the trophy?
Well, absolutely. I think the dressing was buzzing. It was really, that's what the players want, you know. When there are two parts in football, you know. You are... And I actually experienced the Spurs both parts. It's that kind of the low end scenario when you really battle for the relegation. It's not a nice one, to be honest, to be in there. It's really like you do not play, or you actually don't enjoy that playing, because you're not feeling as confident, or your players around you are confident. They're really playing just for surviving, and that's not nice. It's a painful, actually, football to play with, you know. But then it comes to the other side when you start to be playing extremely successful, you start to win, and you can see front of you already the trophy potentially to win into it. That's a nice period to play as a football player. And at the time, I really enjoyed Spurs, really playing football, because I can see we are really playing as a unit. We start to play good football as well at the time. And we had a good chance to win against Leicester City at that time in the 99.
Ramon, you mentioned it, that injury that you know a couple of weeks before the final that was coming. That stress factor, how much did that damage your game? Because it felt that, you know, after you had that stress fracture, it was very difficult for you to regain that form, which then would lead to, you know, just getting back into the 11 to have a consistent feature in that Spurs side. Was that very difficult after you obviously received that injury to really try and get back into that Tottenham side under Graham?
Yeah, well, first of all, it was a big question because I afterwards, after the game, at the final, pretty much went to the Swiss national team to see my doctor. And at that time, I had no clue of my ankle and my stress fracture there in the first place. So yeah, I went straight to the hospital to do a scan. And after the scan came back and the doctor saw me in the Swiss national team, he looked at me, first of all, calmly, as a doctor he's supposed to be. And he said, well, you're very lucky you actually potentially can play football in the future. So that was his first sentence. And I said, well, what does it mean? Can I play football in the future, or is it just I can't play anymore? So either potentially, maybe. So I was like, wow, maybe my career would be finished already by then, because he was very serious about it, that my fractured foot was 2 to 3 weeks already old, and to heal this back was a very difficult kind of way of doing it, you know. Now, it was very tough to take, and then at the time was a little bit angry, But at the same time, I said, you know what? I still won the League Cup. I still have a medal. Nobody can take this away, you know, whatever happens, you know. That, in a way, was giving me kind of the positive side of it. But at the same time, Ramon, you're crazy. Why did you do that, you know? Because kind of you really harm your potential future career, you know. But lucky enough, I had some good doctors at the time. Took me a good 9 months to recover as such. But yeah, it was difficult to come back at the time because I think it did, you know, 9 months away from football, and especially in a professional environment, it's a long time.
Now, interesting, Ramon, when you first initially heard of Celtic's interest, you rejected the move to the club. What made you reject the move to Celtic initially at the time?
Well, I didn't really reject it in the first place. Because I wanted to stay for Spurs, to be honest with you, in the first place, because I still had then about 6-7 months of a contract with Spurs, you know, and I wanted to know what Spurs wanted to do, you know, if they want to prolong it or take him another contract, you know. So I, at that time, realised that it's not going to happen, or they're not going to make a decision then and there. Looking at the time that Celtic was there on the play, then I said Celtic is a great club to go. And I thought, okay, at least Celtic I can play and potentially have a longer contract as well going forward, you know. So when they came back, frankly saying, I wanted to go to Celtic because I think at the time Celtic gave me a good opportunity to play and potentially have a long future with them.
You were very successful at Celtic. I believe you won multiple trophies with the club, and they are a huge club. Mm. Do you say you see yourself after your football career, and you sat down for a few years and thought about it? Do you see yourself more as a sort of Tottenham man, or a Celtic man, or even a Grasshopper Zurich sort of man?
Question always comes up to me, you know, which team, you know, let's say that, or Grasshopper without doubt is obviously my youth kind of club, you know. So I always have to be thankful to them to take me on as a professional, you know. Spurs, without a doubt, was my international club in the first place. And don't forget, I got Cagliari in Serie A as well, you know. But saying that, in the same time, Celtic has given me kind of new life after Spurs, when the injury I had, and off the back of winning the League Cup 99, to win the this trophy, the treble with them. That's everybody or every single person who used to play or once played for Celtic can say, once you play for Celtic, it's nearly close to impossible to not to leave that club, because it's an enormous club with passion and support, you know. And for me, having win for them the treble at the time, it was extraordinary. And again, I always repeat to a lot of people, you know, you can play all your life if you won nothing. I'm not sure what you can memorize in the back, you know, going back, you know. In my case, I'm very glad and happy that actually, if I play for Spurs, I can say I got the League Cup final and the medal. I go for Celtic, I got the three trophies. And that's something money just can't buy. And whatever you're saying, I think this is the legacy you need as a player or football player, professional, want to do trophies, because that's something you lay on.
Ramon, we might have to keep you away from Harry Kane for a little while. Because he's come out saying he's looking to win some trophies, and we can't have you saying that to him, because we're getting worried at Tottenham about this crop of players we've got and whether they can start looking elsewhere.
Harry Kane, you know, I'm he's right in saying that, to be honest with you, you know. I think he's thankful actually that Spurs gave him the career to go through as a young player. He proved himself massively, let's call it that, let's be honest, you know. I think he's done extremely well with Spurs, scoring goal, also now for England as well. Now, he had a great, great, great chance at the Champions League final. He was injured. Now, question mark, should he start at the start? That's another question mark, to be honest with you, because he came back from the injury, all right? Now, but he's a striker, top striker in the world, without a doubt. He has to play in a team. We can play every year either in the Champions League or compete for the Champions League kind of trophy, or the Premier League, or whatever league he's going to play into it. Because at the end of the day, as I say, you want to have trophies at home, because that's what you're going for. And if the club doesn't give him this platform, I think for both, it's better to leave, because both not thinking the same way, potentially. And I think the shame, because I think Spurs, I really thought the last 4 or 5 years really was going that direction. Well-managed club, I have to give that to Levy at the same time. But at the same time, as you know, in football, you have to reinvest for the future, in the long term as well. And if you want to compete the top five, top six, you have to do a very strong team to compete the Premier League, you know. And I think that's what Harry Kane wants to see and to know potentially going forward, you know.
It's interesting, Ramon, you bring that up in terms of, you know, you're now looking in from the outside. So obviously for you, you do feel that at the time, we look back at that season for Spurs where they had that midfield axis of Wanyama, Dembele, they had Dele Alli in there. Obviously Harry Kane up top, and then we had the fullbacks, Kyle Walker, Danny Rose. You can kind of name, reel this team off the top of your head. You kind of know it so well. Adavira, Vertonghen at the back, Lloris in goal. That kind of time where Spurs were so, so strong, they kind of only needed, you would say, kind of two or three players to really push on and be able to compete for the title. Is that what you look at for Tottenham, that they never really took the plunge when they should have done and invest in the team, invest in the squad, invest in Maurizio Pochettino and back them? And instead, we kind of went through this kind of period where we went, as it's well documented, two transfer windows without spending any money, 500 days where Pochettino got Tottenham to a Champions League final. When you look at Spurs now and you see the change in manager and what we're going through now, and again, it kind of feels like you can kind of reflect something back to the 90s, because we had a very, very popular manager in charge, and then obviously we let that manager go. For Spurs, we've now gone back to a more defensive style coach in Jose Mourinho. What do you think the future does hold for Tottenham under Jose?
It's difficult to say now. I think, first of all, I was very, very surprised in the first place that Pochettino left halfway, to be honest with you, after back on a very successful kind of season and going to the Champions League final. Now, in my opinion, if that was the case, he wanted to that Pochettino goes, why does he not leave him straight away from the beginning for the season, have a start, and have some manager starting for the first, not halfway, you know. That's my question mark in the first place, okay? Saying that, Pochettino done a fantastic job, you know, given that he's not been giving us much money to potentially invest in extra players, saying that we had the best stadium built in the same time. So, Levy's point of view, defense point of view, from business point of view, you have to see, okay, what do you want? A good stadium, build up infrastructure for the future, and then also save also on the side for the players. He's done very well on that side, because that was the most successful period whilst he was saving money, funny enough, you know. But if I look one of the seasons where they really, really could actually help for one or two players extra is when Leicester City, the surprising Premier League win, you call it, that was about 4 or 5 games I remember that time. Spurs really had the chance, had that 1-2 games winning and potentially win the league at that time. That was a very good season to win the league. But again, that small kind of 1 or 2 players not having makes a differential potentially to win the league or not. And today is very competitive with a lot of teams out there. And if you don't have that, you're still swimming around the mid-table, potentially qualify for the Champions League. And if you want to have that, okay, but then you're not Tottenham Hotspur, you're another club.
Ramon, in terms of since you've hung up your boots and stopped playing, how involved are you still, if anything, with Tottenham? Do Tottenham invite you back to play with sort of legends teams, or do you ever go to the stadium or training ground or anything like that?
Well, they have a kind of a legend team a game sometimes in the summer, and it's nice they're doing this, because Falco is one of the captain there, and he organised some friendly games, or like going around North London, one of the teams are playing, or charity games we're playing against. And it's nice to see old mates from the past to be there this world. And I think this is one of the points I think at Spurs should be more improved, because not much has been done in terms of having ex-players back. If I look at now other teams, for example, like Bayern Munich, or let's say even Arsenal, frankly saying, funny enough, you know, the ex-players used to play for the club, I think they're doing a way much better job. Bayern Munich, it absolutely blows away how they really look after ex-players to play for them, you know, in terms of they're using it very cleverly because they're used to play for these clubs for a long time, even though we're in the 80s or 70s or now in the 90s as such, because you can use them very cleverly with all the fans they used to have in those days. They were fans of their players. Of course, now you've got new generation, but also the sponsors from the day were potentially the generation that supported these players 20 years ago. And Bayern Munich cleverly used them extremely well in the, on the match day. They're there. Yes, they have some ambassadors and everything, but I think they're doing the, I'm a little bit disappointed they're not doing as much as they're supposed to. Not just myself, but I think other players, ex-players, or I can, they can say potentially the same thing. They should do much more for them. Yeah, I'll go sometimes. I'm happy to go to the new stadium as well and everything, but it's not something they invite me openly, let's call it that. I have to pretty much ask for a ticket.
That's disappointing, isn't it? That is disappointing. And, you know, to be fair, Ramon, we laugh. You know, there was a time at Spurs who used to read The Economist on the team bus. I think that was very popular and everyone knew about that. After your retirement in 2012, you became a founding member of the Duet Group, a financial group specialising in asset management and private equity. You then, in 2006, also founded the Matterhorn Capital Result, a Swiss real estate company focusing on the development of luxury hotels worldwide, opening the first facilities in Verbier, Switzerland. Are you proud of your accomplishments you have made after your football career came to an end?
Yes, because let's go back in terms of what is the football players in the first perception there. You know, obviously they play football, they're talented, everybody looks up to them. And yes, okay, they're earning money now, earning way much more money than 20, 30 years ago. It's ridiculous, frankly saying. But I was glad that I would defend players' salaries, no problem with that. But is the perception of the players, what is he doing after the career of football playing? And that's not just ones who play in the 70s, 80s or 90s, but even the ones even now that may have a little bit of money. But at the same time, it's a question mark. When you retire, what do you do? It's a huge, huge question mark. And don't forget, they're in the age of 34, 35, maximum 36. Still extremely, extremely young, you know, to go into a new life, a new career. Not everybody can be a coach. Not everybody can be a manager or be anything, being potentially in the media. Okay, it's not everybody. It's a thousand of players out there. So the question mark is very, 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 very high. What do you do? And then in my case, I was lucky enough that I had some guidance, but also some thoughts in terms of what do I do before I retire, 2 to 3 years beforehand, you know. And coming back, obviously, to education, where we started the program, you know, when you had this business degree in banking and finance in Switzerland, that was one of the options to go into it. Doesn't mean you have to go that direction, because you can always change. But it has given me the confidence to go that direction. I took it. I went to that managing industry, financial industry. But again, you got this enormous perception. I remember still on starting in that industry, when you go into meetings, you know, you got that perception of footballer. What the hell do you know about finance? Are you educated, frankly saying? And it's this dumb footballer kind of scenario perception, you know, when it... You're actually fighting more the perception, actually the knowledge or the product you want to sell at that time. And that was the difficult part, to be honest, in the first 2 years or 3 years when I started the business and be part of the finance world. But I also can see the financial world was also very cynical and very worse and a lot of egos. So I learned a lot after the career, but it had given me a guidance because I had something to back up with an education to go somewhere involved. And I think I will advise every single player before he retires to do something or think about it, which direction. Today, again, I repeat, the money is much higher. They have a less problem, but in the same time, you still need to organise your life for the future.
Yeah, Ramon, you sort of had two very successful careers in terms of your banking and finance work and then also your trophy-winning careers as a footballer. You announced that you were considering standing as a candidate FIFA presidential election. How close did you actually come to standing for the presidency? And is that something that may interest you in later life?
Yes, good question. At the time, 2015, when the trouble came into FIFA, as we all know, major corruption scandals. I think it was an enormous cleanup exercise within the football industry. I think the shock went through the system. Long time people were in the same seat and could actually do whatever they want in a way. I think it was not very healthy for the football industry from a moral point of view, but from ethical point of view as well. And I think at that time I was kind of ready to think, you know, what is potentially something they need, a person where not coming just only from the football side, but also has some business and finance knowledge as well, because I think the football industry, as you can see and we know, is huge and enormous, especially the financial rewards are much higher than anyone in the industry, in the entertainment industry in this time, you know. I was by default again requested, you know, because it was so in turmoil, the whole industry, and I had a call by very high, let's call it, European politicians in that side, where I knew and dealt with during that time, to Ramon, why don't you not stand for such organizations? We need some fresh blood, you know. So when the request came for such a high position, we're very respected, you have to consider and take it very seriously, to be honest with you. So then I thought, okay, let's analyze it, what can be doing. And then, yeah, I was extremely close to go into the race and doing it. But at the same time, was a very realistic person and say, okay, maybe that will be potentially too early for me to go in both.
You have the sort of guidance and support, maybe go on and do that in later life. So that's a really interesting option for you.
Yeah, maybe that is an option, of course. I smelled a little bit the background, or the back office, we call it in this age, from the sports politic, how it works, you know, behind the scene. Don't forget, I came complete as a very naive into these potential at the beginning, you know, not limited with knowledge, but the naivety is there. But I extremely learned very, very, very fast who is who, what is who, and what needs to be done behind the scene, you know. And now I gained extremely good knowledge with that. And I'll be honest with you, if I didn't like it, what I saw or what I was seeing at the time, I'll be telling you another day, no, that's not for me. Forget it. I don't think there's something that will go potentially in the future. But it has given me a little bit kind of a kick to say, you know what, I actually like it, because there is something to be done here and can be done in the future. And why not? You never know.
There you go. You never know. Well, Ramon, it's been a fascinating hour or so. It's been a real pleasure having you. We have to ask you before you go, you play with some great, great players during your time at Tottenham. If you could pick one of those players that you'd say is the best player that you play with at Tottenham, who would that player be?
You can't offend all the players, because all the players were good as well. But if I have to pick only one, yeah, they're all the good players at the time. Yeah, you have to say, I think David Ginola, yes. Oh, I have to play, yeah.
I'm glad you said that. My favourite growing up as a child, David Ginola. But of course, Ramon, listen, it's been a pleasure. John, was that a worthy answer from Ramon there, David Ginola?
This was a player that won the PFA Player of the Year whilst playing for a team that finished 14th. So that speaks volumes about the individual brilliance of David Ginola. But Ramon, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. I'm sure our listeners are going to love hearing your stories about the time with Christian Gross. Actually, what it feels like winning a trophy with Tottenham Hotspur. And even so, Leicester Spurs, maybe some of those players you came up against in Serie A. I mean, they are some of the legends of world football. You've had an absolutely amazing career. And just thank you so much for coming on the show this evening. Our listeners and Spurs fans across the world will absolutely love this show. So thanks again. And if you ever need a ticket for Tottenham, Ramon, just contact me and I'll sort you out.
Thank you very much. But I needed to say that, because that's kind of the way it is. And I think most ex-players as well, some of them are feeling that. And I always defend the players, because that's the rights they have to do it, you know. And I have to say again, here as well, for all the potential Spurs listeners, and there's no doubt whatever I used to go, went to White Hart Lane. They always treat me unbelievably fantastically.
During that 90s period, we joked off air, that was quite a testing period to be a supporter and to be a player. Now, we always kind of reference that. If you've survived the 90s as a Tottenham fan, my God, you've done quite well, because that was a very testing period.
And I think the first fans are very loyal and very kind of passionate about it, you know. And I think I can characterise in terms of, they want to win something, and if it doesn't work, and obviously they want to let it out, you know, why not, you know? Of course, but at the same time, I have to tell them, we are still human beings, we're still players, of course. We're human beings, we're trying our best. We're not making on purpose to lose again, because we're not in that game to lose. We are here to win, you know. But again, I have to appreciate again, every time, and I have to say that's the one thing I love about the club or the Spurs supporters, is I, every time I go to the club or go close to the club or to watch the game, they're always are very nice to me, have nice things to say to them, or whatever Spurs support I see around in a cap, sometimes in a black cap, whatever it is, you know, it's the same thing. And I appreciate, thank you very much for that as well.
Oh, listen, Ramon, it's been an absolute pleasure having you. Listen, I hope you've enjoyed having Ramon with us here. Ramon Vega, everybody. It's been a great show. Ramon, thank you ever so much for this hour. We've really, really enjoyed it, and we wish you all the best. And listen, hopefully maybe we'll do it again sometime.
No worries. Thank you very much, guys.
Okay.
Keep going.
Thank you.
Come on, you Spurs.
Come on, you Spurs. Thank you, John, as well.
Come on, you Spurs. Love that, Ramon.
And Ramon Vega claimed his first goal for Tottenham.
And Vega! There's no flag, and Tottenham have the lead.
Here's the resulting corner from Ginola. And that time it is in. Tottenham are 3-2 up. And it's a goal for Ramon Vega.
Ramon Vega's equaliser, initiating the response, stand up if you want the truth.
It's a goal for Ramon Vega. It's 3-2.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.